Hey y'all, how we doing? Shout out once again to Bear Nation for tuning in to another episode of the Bear Necessities podcast. I am your host, Rob Napoli. The Bear Necessities is a podcast where we sit down with entrepreneurs, ecosystem partners, and innovation folks to talk about what it takes and means to launch, create, and scale business across the world. We talk about the journey and the challenges of being entrepreneur-minded and how that translates into your journey, giving you the tools and knowledge to overcome challenges that you may be facing in your life's journey. The Bear Necessities is part of the Rise Up Media family. We thank you for tuning in. Now, let's get into the show. How are we doing, Bear Nation? We are back again for another episode of the Bear Necessities podcast. And I'm excited because my guest today, man, Walker, how did we meet? I'm trying to think. Who introduced us together?
It was a guy. I think it was a guy who is doing some training, but he left college and went all around the world riding elephants or some shit like that. Yes.
Tom Versetti introduced us about a year ago. And Walker and I got on that first call, and it was like gangbusters. Like, we talked, I think, 30 minutes about nothing before we even got into like, let's get on the pod and all this crazy stuff. It was just like that instant vibe. So Walker, say hello to Bear Nation.
Hey, welcome Bear Nation. I'm so glad to be here, and I'm so glad y'all listen to the show. By the way, I'm a huge Rob Napoli fan, and I'm so excited about his book, The Social Soul, which is coming out. By the time this podcast comes out, the book will be out. So yeah, y'all go exactly. Buy your copy if you haven't already.
I love it. I appreciate that. And you know, so why I love Walker is, so Walker has a school. It's called the No BS Sales School, and or the No BS Sales Program. And yes, you know, Walker believes in the power of intentional transformation, right? And that we are all capable of dramatic improvement in business and in life if you're committed, right? And into the steps that takes. And you know what Walker does for a living is help guide you in those steps. And it's really interesting because Walker's background is, you know, very dynamic in the fact that you spent some time in real estate, you ran Sandler training. So for all my sales folks out there that knows what Sandler is all about, you ran Sandler training for almost, you know, over a decade.
Yeah.
And then you got into entrepreneurship, right? And this intentional transformation is something I really want to talk about it and why this came about. So, you know, that's kind of my mini intro for Walker, and he's just a burst of energy. And so I really want to, I'm going to kick off with a little bit of a curveball and ask this question out the gate, which is, why the fuck did you want to leave something you ran for over a decade to go out on your own and start your own training company? What made you want to say, I'm jumping off the deep end into my own world?
Yeah. So it's funny that I heard this story, Rob, if you don't mind, I'm going to share this quick story that we find ourselves typically in one of three boats in our life, and we can go between them, right? But the first boat is a like a raft. And we're floating down the river, and we're just kind of going where it goes, and we're bouncing off rocks, and we're just going wherever it takes us. Mm-hmm. And the second boat is a rowboat, where we're looking behind us, and we're rowing like hell to get away from whatever it is we're looking at. Mm-hmm. And the third one is a canoe, which is, you see where you're going, you're aiming for a target, you're paddling, and the boat's going left, right, but you know where you're going, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason I left Sandler, I jumped into a rowboat. I'd hired this guy 12 years before that to be my coach. And the reason I hired him to be my coach, I thought sales training was bullshit. And I thought sales coaching was bullshit too. And a friend of mine had given this guy a whole bunch of money, his sales coach. I thought, he's ripping you off. And I'm going to go meet this guy who just ripped you off. And I went and go meet with this guy, and he asked me a couple of questions like, why aren't you making $1 million a year in commercial real estate? And I told him it was because, well, the market's not so good. And plus, I'm kind of new. I'd been doing it 9 years and blah, 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 all these things. And he looked at me and he said, you know, those are excuses, right? And because everybody around me was saying the same thing about themselves. I was with a bunch of, you know, quote, newer people. And I didn't realize that. And it was like he stuck me with a knife. Mm-hmm. And so it was at that moment, right, that I was like, holy shit, he's right. And so excuses became something I became highly aware of. Mm-hmm. So what the transformation thing is, I realized at that point I needed to accept the excuses I was making and make a change. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise I was going to be riding around in my world then, right, back in the raft, just doing the same damn thing over and over again. So when I was with Sandler, I had a business partner. This guy coached me for 3 years, and then he invited me to come join him in his business. I got there. I loved it. He was my coach, my mentor. We worked together for 10, 11 years, but our paths diverged. Mm-hmm. We had different ideas about the business. He was 10 years older than me, and his idea, what he thought the business was worth, what I thought the business was worth, we were way off. Mm-hmm. I let our relationship fall apart, and I went to go have lunch with a client of mine, and I wasn't going to say anything because I was keeping it all quiet that I was going to quit, but he looks at me. He gave me my favorite greeting, which I think I taught him, and I sat down to lunch, and he says, "You look like shit." I was like, oh, my God. But by the way, if you ever want to get somebody's attention, say you look like shit, and they'll go, oh, my God, and they'll may start telling you the problems they're having. So anyway, he said that to me, and I said, oh, my God, I'm so nervous. He said, why? And I said, I'm going to quit my job. He said, why? I said, let the relationship fall apart. And I said, you know, it's 50% my fault. It's 50% his fault. We've just kind of let it go to hell. And I looked over. My client was giving me the stop sign. I said, what are you talking about? And he said, that's an excuse. I said, what do you mean? He goes, if you need to recognize it's 100% your fault, because otherwise you'll always blame the wrong person. And I was like, shit. You're right. And I was like, where the hell did you learn that? He goes, from you. Same thing, right? And so, and I just knew I was going to work every day, and we were making lots of money, good mm-hmm. money, right? But I was miserable. Mm-hmm. And I hated it. And I said, I just can't keep doing this. And I call it the 47-year-old problem. Mm-hmm. I was about 49, but at 47, I really started to chafe. And I believe a lot of people at age 47, within a year or two, been out of school, been out of college for 25 or so years, mm-hmm. and they look around and they go, oh, my God, I've been out of school 25 years. I didn't think I'd be here. I thought I'd be somewhere different than where I am right now. And they make a choice. Mm-hmm. And either they say, fuck it, and they pull the ripcord and go somewhere else, or they say, I'm just going to put my head down for another 15, 20 years and just gut it out.
Yeah.
And I realized that was the path, and I was not going to gut it out. If I was going to work that hard, somebody's work for myself.
Yeah.
And so when I went to him and I realized, and I had a long contract with him, you know, you sign these things when you're all optimistic, beginning mm-hmm. of the time, 3-year non-compete, no big deal, I'm never leaving anyway. What 3-year non-compete? Which, as somebody will tell you, as soon as you quit a job and there's a non-compete, everybody becomes a labor attorney.
Yeah.
They all, oh, those things aren't blah, 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 and they all got all this advice, right? Well, the reality is maybe it can't be enforced, but the problem is you got to defend it.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to, I don't want to pay lawyers any money that I have to. Yeah. And I said, fuck it, I'm just going to live with the non-compete. So then I did training for 3 years. I did outsource VP of sales work for smaller companies for 3 years. And that was miserable. Mm-hmm. I sucked at it. I hated it. I hate the business model. And then somebody said, hey, why don't you get into training? So why don't you get back into training? And I said, well, I don't have materials. And they said, mm-hmm. yeah, what else? I said, I don't have a classroom. And they said, what else? And I said, I don't know how to do that. And they
sounds
said,
like excuses. You know,
those are all excuses, right? Like, right. And so, mm-hmm. This is the pattern, right? When I catch myself or somebody calls me and makes excuses, that's when I make the turn. And so that's what's happened to me. Does that make sense?
It makes tons of sense. And I love the analogy you started off with, the raft, the rowboat, and the canoe. That is, I've never heard it like that. And it's so, so poignant, because many of us get in a rowboat or the raft, and we either just let life take us and we're like, well, it's out of my control, or we get in the robot and running from something. And very many times we don't realize that we can drive our own path through the canoe, and it's never easy, right? I talk about all the time, I love nonlinear career paths. I love the fact that at 47, right, 49 at the time, you looked at, you know, it's really easy to think, I'm too old for this shit. Right. And I think of movie Die Hard. Right. Danny Glover saying, I'm too old for this shit. But, you know, the fact is that, and this is what I love about it, is it's never too late. And, you know, when I was going to school, and you're obviously before me, like, they didn't teach entrepreneurship as a business.
Yeah, no.
it, you know, you didn't really look at it like that. And so to have that kind of realization, and then also to have, you know, some of us need a kick in the ass, and to have the people in your life to say, hey, those are excuses. Because really easy to make excuses. And excuses, I mean, that's what I talk about, internal versus external motivation. External motivation is great to get the fire burning. But if you look for all these external motivation, you're always going to find excuses not to, versus that internal drive. Yes. And oh, I love that analogy. Just as a small sidebar, because the canoe story, and because for those listeners don't know, Walker lives down in South Carolina. We bonded over our outdoor lifestyle growing up on a farm in Missouri. And three Christmases ago now, I was back home in Missouri, and we had a mile pond. It was frozen over, and but we had like 60-degree weather at Christmas. So like, the ice is starting to break, and it's filled by the DNR with bass, and the bass are coming out. So we're like trying to fish. So like, we get in the canoe. We go get in the canoes to like start paddling out and breaking the ice up so we could go fish. Well, I have my uncle's hunting boots on that are two sizes too big, and as I'm walking on the dock, I clipped a nail. Fall forward, try to catch myself in the canoe, and fall into the icy pond. And it's just me and my little brother, and the whole family is walking. The dogs come walking up. I'm pants off with just a sweatshirt off. My brother's wearing just sweatpants with his shirt off. We're just standing there. People are like, what the hell just happened? And so that was one Christmas. The following year Christmas, I got my revenge on the canoe. So we're back.
Yeah,
we're out shooting the bows, you know, just playing around bow target practice. And I haven't shot a bow in probably 5-6 years at this point.
Yeah.
So we set it up, you know, 10 yards out. I line up the shot, and at the last second, I hitched, you know, and I shot too high. And about 50 yards behind was that damn canoe, and I shot it through the canoe. I shot an arrow through the canoe, an aluminum canoe.
Holy shit.
And my uncle looks at me and goes, how the fuck did you do that? And I was like, I don't know. It's revenge for last Christmas. Anyways, that's my canoe story. I figured you would enjoy it, and hopefully the audience laughing through this, because this is like just typical Rob. But now, sidebar over, back to Walker.
But you know, it's funny though, because I was, my first 3 years and 4 years, I found myself in the canoe. By the way, when I quit my job, we just 2 years before built a house that we designed and built a house we'd always dreamed of building on some property that my family owned. I had two kids in private school. My wife was not working. And I quit anyway with no plan.
Scary shit.
But you know what? That's kind of who I am, a pull the ripcord and figure it out kind of guy. Yeah. And other people, you know, I had to assure my wife it's going to be okay, because I knew it'd be okay, but I had no idea how. Mm. And during that next, 3 or 4 years, I had to sell my house, move to a rental house, because I had to make a choice. Am I going to pull my kids out of private school, or am I going to sell my house? Because I can't keep both. Mm-hmm. And what I recognized was that the house was, if I kept the house, that was protect my ego, right? And if I keep the kids in school, it's protect my kids. And so we decided to sell the house. So we sold a 3,500 square foot house, moved to a 1,700 square foot rental house, lived there for 3 years. It sucked. My kids hated it. My wife hated it. I went through terrible financial crisis, because we didn't have any money. And I had to go from I had an office mate, a guy who works across the hall from me, and I was just flat broke for about 18 months. Mm-hmm. And one time I had, it was the third month in a row, I couldn't pay my water bill. And I had to go to the guy across the hall and say, can you lend me $500? Mm-hmm. And I'll pay you back. But it was dire, but I knew that if I just keep going, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
If I just keep going, and eventually, it's funny the way my business works. COVID actually helped my business considerably. So yeah. Anyway.
So, you know, I want to kind of dig into this, because it, you know, resonates with me. You know, I was lucky enough that my parents put me through private school. I went to Catholic high school, and, you know, I watched my dad work two jobs just so that I could do that. And, you know, we make all these decisions in life, and especially at that time, we're probably looking at what, 5 years ago now, 6 years ago when this all happened. In your generation, asking for help is seen as a bad thing.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that, you know, the fact that you had the internal motivation and fortitude to say, it's going to get better. I need a little help. And we're starting to now, and I see a lot of content. I create a lot of content that entrepreneurship is hard. Like, to start a business from zero to one and start over after a 3-year non-compete, you don't have a client list, you have none of these things, to go back and do all these things and then say, you know what, hey, I need help. That is huge. And that's saying I'm investing in things that matter to me and my kid's future. I'm putting the things that I need to put on hold to make the decisions I need. And we're so in tune to like material wealth and status, and we're afraid to ask for help. And I think that right there is a moment of clarity for any entrepreneur out there, because we're all many entrepreneurs in early stage. And you know what? Many people just in general are feeling like they have to keep up with the Joneses, and you don't. Live how you want to live and stay the path and drive the path. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to fall out. That canoe's going to go off course. It's going to tip over. They're not, I mean, canoes by nature aren't very stable. You know, all these things. And so I think that's such a big lesson, that at any stage in your journey, whether you're 18, 27, 32, 49, 61, asking for help is not a bad thing. And it can be the opportunity that you need to grow. So I really think that's amazing. I appreciate you sharing that story. I mean, some of those things aren't easy to share.
Let me tell you, the one that was harder to share was that I was just after my father died, about 3 or 4 years ago, I was struggling mightily with all kinds of things. But money was still a major, major concern. And there was a guy that I was following on social media. His name is Hank Norman, works for a company called Two Market Media. And what I noticed when I saw him on LinkedIn or Twitter, he posted a lot of videos. And what I saw immediately was every single video he was speaking to me. Mm-hmm. He somehow knew me and was speaking to, and every single, I was like, shit, that's exactly what I need to hear right now. And so I reached out to him, DM'd him, and we talked a little back and forth. And I said, how do I hire you? And I said, cause I need your help. And he said, let's get on the phone with my partner. And so I get on the phone with the partner and Hank. And I said, I need your help. And he said, why? And I said, cause I got this business. I got this idea. And I said, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. I just know that if I can learn to do what Hank does, if you guys can show me what Hank does, I can make a gazillion dollars. And he said, do you have any money? I said, I got no fucking money. I said, but don't worry. I don't give a shit what it costs, because I'm going to go borrow the money, because if I can learn what Hank does, I can do anything in the world.
Yeah.
At the end of our first conversation, Steve said, and but Steve said, you're not fucking committed. And he hung up the phone. And I put my head on the desk and I was like, holy shit. And I thought about it for 24 hours and I picked up the phone. I called back and I said, you know what? You're right. I had some hesitation. I was nervous and I'm still wondering what else can happen. And I said, here's what I'll tell you. I'm committed. You tell me the number, whatever the number is. I'll go to the bank and get it, and I'll be the best client you've ever had, because I'll do every fucking thing you tell me to do. Mm-hmm. He said, okay, you're in. And so he told me the number, and I called my banker, and I said, here's what I want. And understand, I already owe the banker $100,000+ for back taxes.
Oof.
I'm well known to the banker, right? I'm well known to him. And I say, I need to borrow more money. He said, for what? And I told him. And I said, here's my vision. Here's what it can do. You watch the guy. And he said, okay, here's X. He said, how are you going to pay it back? I said, because my business is going to work. And for the next 18 months, I worked with Hank and Steve. I created a course. We created a podcast. I learned about different methods of reaching people. I learned how to communicate via. And because of that, because of that work that coach put me through, I had to take everything I knew, put it down, put it in a system, and make it work. And that step, that me stepping out with, I mean, I just took a leap of faith. Mm-hmm. That's what's made the difference. It's because they forced me to do the hard shit and not just pull stuff out of my ass, which is what I was doing before.
I love that. And it takes me back to an episode that I did with my buddy TK recently. And he's early in his career. He went to school for a year, decided to leave school and start his own agency. And he talks about this theory called glass or air, and that you're standing in this on this platform, and three sides of it are glass and one is air. And you don't know which one is air, so you jump and you try things. And if you hit glass, you know that's not the one. And you hit a glass again, and then eventually you're going to find where the air is, and you got to jump, and you can't be hesitant. Because it's really easy to be hesitant because you smack glass once or twice before, right? And you don't know when you're going to hit air. But when you hit that jump, you got to lean into it, and you got to let that go. And it just made me think about that leap of faith. And
wow.
He calls it the glass of air. So I give all credit to TK for that. But that just sounds like that. And, you know, you spent those 3 or 4 years doing something you hated,
yep.
Learning, you know, coming off of sales training to then being a sales trainer for one of the most prestigious kind of sales training yep. methods out there in the center training, to running as a VP of sales that you weren't good at, you hated it, and now you're training sales leaders and founders and salespeople. And I'm sure you learned a lot of lessons, but what is something key that you learned in that year, those years of chopping wood, carrying water, doing things you hated to learn those lessons? What was like the big takeaway so that when you took this leap of faith and you went and called this banker, all those things made sense? Was there something or a series of things that happened through those negative experiences that just made you ready?
Well, I don't know if you're ever ready. I think if you wait till you're ready, I think it's too late. I think what I have, you know, the lessons that I learned were similar to what I talked about before. It's excuses are a cancer, and commitment is the key to success. Mm-hmm. If you are fully committed, you'll do whatever the hell it takes. And there were a year there, I worked 90 hours a week. I was working on a course, doing all this shit, coming in Saturdays and Sundays and just working my ass off. And because there was no choice.
Yeah.
I was fully committed. And if I didn't ever want to go work for somebody else again, I don't ever want to do that. I never need a resume in my life.
Yeah.
And so it's commitment. I would say you've got to be fully committed that this is a path, and whether the path could go left or right, but committed to doing something.
Yeah. Well, I think that makes sense, right? You're running as a fractional VP for different clients. You were never committed fully to any role, client opportunity, just by nature.
Nor were they to me.
Yeah.
Nor were they to me, right? Because I was somebody they hired because they didn't have enough money to hire a full-time guy.
Yeah. It was a two-way street.
I was the guy they hired because they had problems. Yeah. It was a mess. It was a shitty business model
for me. And you know, some people make it work, and it's amazing to see that they can be that stopgap, and that's amazing. But for you, the commitment wasn't there because you weren't finding passion in it. You were not putting the time, energy, and effort in. So that's what made it kind of. But at the same point, it taught you a lot about what commitment needed to look like when you're there, right? And
yes.
So I want to kind of transition. So you launched the No BS Sales School. You did all these things to get it there. And you and I have talked about this before in our own conversations, and you kind of mentioned it earlier, that different vision. So what was it when you were like, okay, I'm going to put together a sales school and a course, having all this background, what did you see as like, I want to make this kind of impact, and here's what I see about the industry that's doing it wrong, and here's how I want to fix it. What was that like for you?
So I believe, right, we talked about this intentional transformation thing, right? And I think that sales and salespeople definitely need transformation to manage in these times. And what I think is missing from a lot of sales training is, to use your words, it's a soul, right? Is to recognize that, I'll steal from Daniel Pink, to sell is human. And that's one of the things that we often, salespeople forget, right? They think it's about convincing somebody. It's about tackling people. It's about putting pressure on people. And my experience has been that shit is miserable for the prospect and for the salesperson. Mm-hmm. And so what I believe is that we need to be having real conversations with people. We need to be having conversations where the salesperson is sincerely curious. They don't go in to educate. They go in to be educated. And I think that's not something that's taught a lot.
Yeah,
and that salespeople need to go in not with the idea, I'm going to teach these, you know, and everybody says, oh, I want to do, you know, educate them on. Nobody gives a shit what you do.
Yeah.
And what they want, what they care about is, do you understand? And what I teach people is, how can you truly understand someone and they know you understand? Mm-hmm. I have a friend who's a neurosurgeon, and I asked him about his life, and he said he for 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, he sees somewhere between 45 and 60 patients a day. Mm-hmm. Tuesday and Thursday, he does surgery, between 5 and 10 operations a day. He's been doing it 30 years, mm-hmm. right? And I went to go see him because I had a back problem. And I went in there to go see him and said, man, I'm hurting. And he goes, okay, let me – he goes, here you go. Take some of these steroids, and then let's see if you need a shot, and da-da-da-da, come back in 2 weeks. Great. Well, so I did all that. And 2 years later, I had more back problems. It took me a while to get in to see Scott, so I called my other friend, William. Mm-hmm. And I go, and I said, William, and he's another buddy of mine. I said, William, my back hurts. He goes, tell me about that. I said, it's shooting down my leg. He goes, how long has it been going on? I said, I don't know, 3-4 months. He goes, what have you tried to do about it? And I told him, and he's like, okay, and you know, that stuff worked. So anyway, he has the same conversations the other guy does. He spent 5 more minutes with me, but he was, the first guy was clinical. I've seen it 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. I know what you need. Here, take this. We'll go to the next step. The second guy was, let me understand. Tell me more. Help me. And you know who I go back to now? The second guy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I love this because I teach when the marketing side, when I talk about outreach and educating your prospect, I talk about that a lot, but you can't educate your prospect until you know their pain and understand. That's why customer discovery is really first. And one of the things that I talk a lot about is, and I know other trainers talk about this. I was on Revenue Real Hotline with Amy, and we were talking about this, is that usually the pain that they tell you is either a fake one or it's a secondary, tertiary pain of the real root problem. And most of us see that first pain and we're like, boom, I want to go sell on it. That's my hook. Versus like, put that to the side. We need to ask a few more questions. We need to get deeper and really understand. Because once you understand, then you can put on your education hat and start having these conversations. And so many entrepreneurs early in their business, the minute they get a call, they want to sell because they're so excited and they word vomit everywhere. And this is why I think so many early stage entrepreneurs need to learn how to sell first. Because if they learn how to do it, when their sales teams go out in force and at scale, it's easy because you can say, I've been there, I've done that, I've had these conversations, and it's documented. And I think that's really an important step that, you know, we look at all these big exits, all these big things, and not those are cool. Those are companies that can do that, but not every company can, and most don't. And there's nothing wrong with being an S&P.
You're getting survivor bias, right? All you're hearing about is the freaking unicorns. You're not hearing about the thousands that go down.
Yeah, and or the fact that there's hundreds of businesses out there that are doing $5 million a year and doing impactful work and having really strong businesses, but no one ever hears about it. So I think that's really cool. And that's one of the things that I've always been, you know, really intrigued about with Innovia Sales School and what you've built, is that it takes it back to, you've been through all this shit. I love Glengarry Glen Ross. I love Boiler Room.
Yeah.
Those movies still amp me up, Wolf of Wall Street. But I also know when it's like, okay, that no longer is not it.
There's that's a lot you can take away.
Exactly. It's entertainment. Yeah, you can get excited about it. It can pump you up. You can take some things away from it, but it's not what sales is today. And
can I bring up something that you brought up? Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
So a lot of entrepreneurs got into their job because they love what they do and they're excited about whatever it is that they're doing. If they have a software product or they've got whatever they're making or their service, they're excited about it. And what they wanted, they're so excited, they want to go tell people about it. Mm-hmm. And what you learn is, so that's, and it's not the product. It's never about the product. It's about the person you're talking to and what do they think is the problem and how is that impacting them personally and what happens if they don't fix it. And then you can begin to talk about just the things about your product that are mm-hmm. relevant to fixing the problem. And that just takes people a long time to get.
Yeah. And that honestly is something that many people, they don't have the fortitude for, they don't know how to manage it, they don't know how to ask the questions. And that is something that I think part of why what you do is so impactful, and I know you and I've talked about, is you want to teach those that come to the Innovia Sales School and work with you that this is how to be human and how to be intentional. You know, we talk about believe in the power of intentional transformation. If you're not committed to having those conversations, if you're not committed to asking the deeper questions, if you're not committed to going the extra step and getting to know them, none of this works. And so you have to be intentional about every step of the way. And so, you know, that's what I think is so impactful. And, you know, you and I have talked many times about this in our businesses and how to grow. And, you know, I'm really excited to continue to see what the work that you do. And, you know, the next question I have for you is, as we look at 2022, you said, you know, COVID actually helped your business and allowed you to reach more people and allow you to do some new things. What are you most excited about in 2022? And what is the, if you can kind of wrap up, what is the impact you want to have when you look at December 31st, 2022, what's the impact that you want to create with your business this year? So what are you most excited for and the impact you want to make?
So the reason that my COVID helped my business is because I was broke when I started it. And I started using Zoom 4 years ago, back when people didn't know what that was. I had to spell it for people. And so when all of a sudden everybody went to Zoom, I was right in the sweet spot. What I'm excited about for 22 is, honestly, it's the uncertainty in the economy. A lot of people are feeling like they look at the stock market or at the crypto or whatever, and they see it going up, 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 up. And they know at some point things are going to change. And maybe they've been, you know, they've gotten by because they're a rising tide, right? Raises all boats. And one of my favorite Warren Buffett quotes is, nobody knows who's swimming naked till the tide goes out. Right. And so people now have money and they can invest in training now while they have money. Because oftentimes if they wait until they're in a ditch and they go, God, we need training, they ain't got no money to pay for it. So I'm excited about the quite frankly, the uncertainty in the marketplace, because that drives. And here's the thing. I typically work with not the leader in the industry. I work with number 2, 3, 5, 10, 50 that's got to go take business away from the leader. So they realize they've got to be mavericks and go take shit. So they get excited, right? When they see uncertainty, they realize we're going to capitalize on this and we're going to crush the people who are lazy right now. What I'm most excited impacting is, gosh, Rob, if I can make... I'd love to believe that when I'm done, when I hang up my skates 20 years from now, that 15, 20% of the sales population is really, really good at asking questions, is really good at understanding, and is even comfortable saying to somebody, I don't think we're going to be the right fit. I don't think it's the right time. And to say that honestly and to believe that and to walk away with your head up going, it wasn't the right fit. Maybe you talk to him again 90 days later or a year later, but right now, not everybody's the right fit for you. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I love that, because that's when you know that we've grown and matured enough to understand what works, you know, especially for the industry, like what works for the business and what doesn't. It's really easy to want to take money because the commission check versus, you know, what is the service you're going to get, and what is the longevity of that client, and what does that mean for myself as a person, my business, and the company I represent, whether you're an entrepreneur or a sales leader or a salesperson at a business, right? And so I think that's a really cool impact that you want to create, and excited to see where that continues to go for you. And you know, I've had the pleasure to sit in on a few of your sessions, and I can tell you, if you ever work with Walker, you can't hide. And I think it's really easy. You know, I do a lot of training myself and run a lot of training. So it's really easy for people to want to hide on Zoom, cam mic off. And I do the same thing you do. Like, I don't start till everyone has cam mic on. Otherwise, you can get out.
Cam mic on.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise you can get out, because, you know, if you're not interacting, then why are you here? You know, and correct. If you're not committed to learning something, you know, then it just falls on deaf ears anyways. And you're just checking a box when that's not that's a waste of your hour, to be honest. So I love it.
So one of the things you and I both do is, you know, a lot of times people see sales training as an event where somebody goes for an hour or a half a day or a day or a week and they get sales training and then they're sent back out. And oftentimes 2 weeks later, nothing has stuck. And so what you and I both do is long term incremental. We work with companies for years and for salespeople for, I mean, minimum a year, 12 months to begin to get the concept, right? And to be able to do, instead of just knowing in your head, oh yeah, they do that. It's, I can do that. And that is a part of me, and it's not a move anymore.
Yeah. I love that. And I'm excited. I can't wait to see what continues to happen for you in 2022. And I hope to be a part of, you know, the impact you'll make in 20 years from now when you hang up your skates and help drive that as a, you know, the industry as a whole. Cause it's really easy too, right? Coaches and trainers to, you know, want to kind of hoard their little network. And it's like, no, I want to know more coaches so I can pass, because I do the same thing. Sometimes people aren't right for me and I'm going to pass that business on. And every person needs to think like that, because when you build and have that strong network, you can leverage it. And that looks good on you when you refer business away from you to somebody else that is a better fit. That's everything. because that everybody that makes wins. Exactly. So,
I think it's a conscious choice for people to be a giver. I think it's static for everybody. People, you take her. I think you have to make a choice to be a giver. And once you make that choice, when two givers meet each other, they can make each other a lot of money and become great friends.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've talked about on this podcast, and you mentioned my book at the top of the hour, you know, Social Soul is going to be out by the time this podcast drops. And I talk about it in there. When I first started my network, I was a taker. And it wasn't until I read Go Giver Some More and really started it. Embodying that daily, that my life changed, the work that I did changed, the opportunities that I had changed, then I went to Italy and all these things started to happen. And so I'm with you on that, and I love that. And you know, I know you and I could talk for hours, as we sometimes do, but
yeah.
I always like to ask these kind of, you know, a couple questions at the end of every show. One being, you know, for those out there that are entrepreneurial minded, you know, Gen Z, millennials that are starting their career or earlier in their career, like, right, you didn't find this kind of passion until 49. You know, what is the advice that you'd give to those people right now as they go through their journeys?
I would say the most important thing is what you mentioned, which is build your network. And I tell people, when you're going to work at a job, don't worry if you take your first job, your second job, they'll say, I don't want to do this the rest of my life, because chances are you're not going to.
Yeah.
And so I tell people, go take a job and look for three things. Number one, am I learning something new? Am I learning helpful skills? Number two, am I making money? And number three, am I meeting people who can help me down the road? Mm-hmm. And as long as all three of those answers are yes, you can stay there. But if in only two of those three after a year or two are that way, then go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I would say that it really is, it's your network and the work that you put in.
Mm-hmm. You got to curate that.
That's the first start.
Yeah, you got to curate that. You can't just like... And I'm a big, I would say chase opportunity, not money. And so I think the two things, am I learning something, people, those first. And then after like that year and a half, if you haven't proven your worth to start making money, then it's time to cut ties and go somewhere that rewards that. Chase that opportunity. I love that. What do you think your superpower is?
You know, I think my superpower is being sincerely curious. I also think it's probably the energy that I bring, because I'm excited about it, but I am super curious all the time. And that's been fun for me. I love that, to learn about people.
I love that, because that's such a big piece of my essence too, like being curious all the time. And I think it's a great superpower, but it's also just a great, like, I can't say it enough. Like, if you want to enjoy life and you want to continue to grow, you have to be curious. If you stay in your box, look what's happened in the world in the last decade.
Oh my God.
If you put your head in the sand or live in your box, you're never going to learn. Too much has happened. Too much has come to light in our world that you have to be curious. You have to learn. You have to evolve and adapt to the surroundings around you. Otherwise, there's no joy. There's no...
Nothing.
There's no experience.
And that's, I would even tighten it up is to be sincerely curious about other people.
Yes.
Because yes, curious about the world is super important, but if you're sincerely curious about other people, I believe every single person in the world has something of value that they can share with you that can make a difference in your life. We just have to spend the time doing that.
Yeah. And it goes both ways. They can make a difference in your life or you can make a difference in theirs, right? By sometimes just being sincerely curious about the person, you can be what they're missing in their life to take them to the next level. And you never know when those people come into your life that help do that. And one of the people that's been that for me is somebody we both know well, in Casey Jones,
man.
So like that's why it's all about, that's what it's all about. What's a book or resource or like a show, some content you would recommend for my listeners out there, because they love listening, they love looking at new content?
Yeah, so here's there's a book that is probably 5 or 6 years old, and it is super relevant. It's super good. Anybody that needs to, that says, I need to get better at sales, it begins with prospecting. Mm-hmm. And so the name of this book is called Fanatical Prospecting by a guy named Jeb Blount, Blount. It is a kick-ass book. It's easy to read. It's very actionable. It's not one of these pie in the sky things. It's got step one, step two, step three. Mm-hmm. And I am a big fan of it. So if you are wondering, how the hell do I sell? What do I need to do? go read Fanatical Prospecting. Buy the book. You can do it on Audible, but you'll want to take notes, so buy the book.
I love that. Yeah, I'm a big fan of, like, I use Audible a lot, but I see there's some books that I just need to, like, be able to, like, highlight, write. And then what I also like to do is I read a lot of books multiple times, and so I sign the book and the date that I read it. So sometimes it's multiple times, and then I'll pass that book on. And sometimes I won't get those books back. Sometimes they'll come back to me with one, and sometimes that person will take the book, pass it along, and I'm tracking them down like 6 months later, and like, oh, hey, Rob, I have your book, and there's like five new names in it.
How about that?
Right? And it's cool.
I love that.
It just gives the book a little bit of character. Some of my books just have my name in it, and that's fine too. It's just, it's a fun thing, and there's probably a dozen books that I've never gotten back in my bookshelf that I've bought new copies and started over with because, you know, I want to have it as a book that I might give out sometime, and it's just, I think it's such a great thing. That's why I love asking this question, is that you have to be curious and you need to learn, and there's always great content that we're missing. So I appreciate that share. You know, Walker, you know, I think the lasting message of this episode is be sincerely curious, and even tighter, be sincerely curious about the person. And I love that message. So if anyone out there at Bear Nation want to get to know you, learn more, potentially work with you, connect with you, how do they find you and what can they do to connect with you?
Sure. So I'm on LinkedIn. At Walker McKay, WALKERMCKAY. Also have a podcast called the No BS Sales Podcast. Comes out every week. Rob has been a guest recently on there. I suggest you listen to that. And my website is walkermckay.com. And there are phone numbers and emails and all that kind of stuff. So
I'll make sure all that's linked in the show notes. And I know that you mentioned to me that there's a kind of a video series that you have, kind of seven sales mistakes. How do they, if somebody wants to find that, how do they find that on your website?
Sure. So what you do is that's, I'm working on that now, right? So you go to the website, www.7salesmistakes.com.
Okay.
So the number 7salesmistakes.com. It's a short, a mini course with about seven mistakes that many people are making and what to do about it to fix it. So I'd love for you to go check that out too.
Awesome.
Thank you, Rob.
You bet. I will make sure to have that link in the show notes as well. Walker, I had a lot of fun, man, and I appreciate you coming on, bringing some energy and sharing some real stories, some things that I know that you like to, you've really opened up, and I've heard you on some other podcasts, you've really opened up and started sharing, but it's not always easy to share those tough stories and to, you know, admit things that has happened. But if we don't talk about these hard things that we're all going through, how do we learn from it? And that's the whole point of this podcast. So I appreciate you, my guy. Thank you so much for being part of the show.
My pleasure, Rob. And you guys that are listening to this, give Rob 5 stars, subscribe to the podcast, share it with other people that need to hear this. You're lucky to have Rob as a resource. I am too.
Walker, I appreciate you. Bear Nation, until next episode, stay well and rise up. Bear Nation, once again, thank you for tuning in and listening to the Bear Necessities Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave us a review. It really does help and means a lot to us, the show. And I want to thank our friends over at Finn. Finn is a social good platform that creates employee engagement and builds culture. It's our mission to support and give back to the communities that we serve around the world. And we do this by giving every guest on our show a $10 donation to the cause of their choosing using the Finn platform. Until next time, thank y'all. Stay well and rise up.